Penguin Random House Audio presents Battle of Ink and Ice, a sensational story of news barons, North Pole explorers, and the making of modern media, by Daryl Hartman. Read for you by Max Anderson. To Dana. Prologue. The Great Goal. September 1st, 1909. The steamer Hans Egil lay at anchor in Lerwick, the windblown capital of Scotland's Shetland Islands. Two men, a Danish mate and an American explorer, Frederick Cook, rowed ashore in a dinghy that morning and proceeded on foot through the town's jumble of narrow streets to the cable station, where Cook asked the operator to transmit several messages. The first was to his wife, Marie, in New York. His first direct communication with her in 2 years, confirming that he was alive and well. The second was to the International Polar Commission in Brussels, and it contained the same startling announcement as the next message, which Cook cabled to James Gordon Bennett, Jr., the Paris-based publisher of the powerful New York Herald. Reached North Pole April 21, 1908. Discovered land far north. Have left sealed exclusive cable of 2,000 words for you with Danish consul at Lerwick, for which I expect $3,000. I go steamer Hans Egil to Copenhagen. News of Cook's discovery had already traveled by word of mouth along the thinly populated coast of Greenland. The handful of missionaries, colonial officials, and others aboard the Hans Egil, which Cook, with no other way of getting back to America, had boarded at the insistence of his Danish hosts, had heard it too. One of the ship's passengers, the inspector of North Greenland, had advised the explorer to publish his own account before speaking to the press, in order to avoid confusion. This had been the reason for the unscheduled stop at Lerwick. James Gordon Bennett of the Herald wasted no time responding to the offer. Cable Dr. Cook's 2,000 words immediately. The words raced along undersea cables and overland telegraph wires as the Hans Egil chugged south. Rough seas slowed the steamer down, and it was more than 2 days before Cook reached Skagen, at the northern edge of Denmark, where the commander of a Danish torpedo boat stationed there greeted the explorer on behalf of his government. A group of shivering Danish journalists came aboard as well, and informed Cook that his account had been printed in the Herald. Denmark's major daily, the Politiken, had splashed the news of his discovery on its front page, they told him, and newspapers around the world had scrambled to do the same. None, however, had celebrated quite as lustily as the Herald, which had devoted several pages to Cook's feat on September 2nd. Seven-column headlines screamed as though from a mountaintop. Fighting famine and ice, the courageous explorer reaches the great goal. Geographers interviewed by the Herald predicted that the discovery would mark an epoch in the history of the scientific world. The main feature, of course, was Cook's account itself, which told of his midwinter departure from the Greenland coast, some 700 miles from the North Pole, and narrated how he had traveled from terra firma onto the shifting sea ice, quote, beyond the range of all life, accompanied by 2 Inuit companions and 24 hardy sled dogs. The route became smoother as the party advanced north, Cook wrote, and yet their swift progress brought little joy. There was a depressing monotony of scene, and life had no pleasures, no spiritual recreation, nothing to relieve the steady physical drag and chronic fatigue. 2 months after leaving Greenland, and 9 months after he'd departed from the United States, Cook wrote, his sextant readings showed the small party to be near its goal, and then at it, that ultimate point where the world's meridians come together. There is nowhere farther north to go, and every time zone is a step away. According to Cook, his celebrations at the top of the world did not last long. He remained at the North Pole some 36 hours, dutifully recording astronomical observations and other details of his surroundings. A long, dangerous journey over crumbling ice lay ahead, and the place itself did not encourage lingering. "What a cheerless spot," he wrote in the Herald, "to have aroused the ambition of men for so many ages." Ambitious men had indeed ventured to the far north for centuries, pushing the limits of survival in a frozen world that was, both physically and conceptually, as distant from the place of human origins as could be imagined. Many of these explorers went there in search of the Northwest Passage, and with it a shorter trading route between Europe and Asia. This fruitless quest claimed hundreds, if not thousands, of human lives. The British Royal Navy's fantastically well-equipped 1845 Franklin expedition, whose 129 members all died in the high Arctic, was only the most notorious example. By the end of the 19th century, the North Pole had replaced the Northwest Passage as the holy grail of Arctic exploring. Another important change had taken place as well. A certain realism had set in. Victorian explorers had dreamed of discovering something spectacular at the top of the world. Now it was generally agreed that they would find nothing there but more drifting sea ice. The U.S. government had long ago stopped devoting blood and treasure to the so-called Arctic problem. The field had been ceded to entrepreneur explorers like Frederick Cook and the private societies and wealthy individuals who backed them. Even if some of the romance had gone out of it, exploring the Arctic was still rewarding. Discovering new territories and geographical features brought wealth and adulation, as did getting closer to the pole than anyone had before. Some explorers truly yearned to be in the far north, and feats like these made it easier for them to raise the money to go back. The cooperation of the daily press was indispensable to the partly heroic, partly self-serving exploring enterprise. Newspapers were likelier than book publishers or magazines to pay for exclusive rights to a story in advance, and in an age before radio or television, they were also the means by which an explorer's deeds were first conveyed to the public. Without the daily press, average Americans had no timely way of knowing what explorers were doing way up north, or what their so-called accomplishments really meant. What many readers urgently wanted to know was very simple. Was the expedition a failure or a triumph? The press, for its part, had nearly as much to gain from these real-life Arctic dramas as explorers did. It was profitable to break big news of any kind, including news of geographical discovery. Newspapers were booming everywhere, and so was the competition for readers and all-important advertisers. Nowhere was this more the case than in New York, which was by 1909 the second largest metropolis in the world after London and awash in newspapers. The owner-publishers of the city's biggest dailies pulled heavy strings and lived in royal splendor. They were ambassadors and kingmakers. William Randolph Hearst used his newspaper empire to upend national politics. Joseph Pulitzer's World had changed the way the American public thought and read. Bennett, the Paris-based owner and publisher of the Herald, was often called the most influential American abroad, and although his paper was not the force it had been a generation earlier, it still reached hundreds of thousands every day and pulled in a staggering $500,000 a year. There was also the New York Times, whose performance over the previous decade had been most remarkable of all. Its publisher, a comparatively unknown Southerner named Adolph Ox, had come to New York City in 1896, borrowed and sweet-talked his way into provisional ownership of the failing Times, and improbably rebuilt it into a force to be reckoned with. Hearst's and Pulitzer's sensational Yellow Journals had been considered the future of journalism at the time. But by turning the Times into a profitable paragon of respectability, Ox had proven the doubters wrong. Though the paper had flourished quietly under him at first, its growing readership and influence could no longer be ignored, especially not by the Herald. The famous rivalry between Pulitzer and Hearst, which had cooled by 1909, is one of the most discussed episodes in the history of journalism. But Ox and Bennett's overlooked battle for New York City's quality readership would also have important consequences. That contest was well underway by 1909, especially when it came to areas of special interest.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?